Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. At 11 on stage and studio, host D. May Roberts features the Fertile Ground Festival, Portland's largest performing arts festival, with festival director Nicole Lane. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Andre Middleton features Pocas Radicales, a queer Latina art collective working toward community engagement through art and activism. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia with host Chris Andre following this.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Film Festival running from January 15th through February 8th. Real Music explores the lively interplay between sound and image, music and culture. Opening night, January 15th, will be Roxy the Movie, directed by Frank Zappa. Filmed over three nights in December 1973 at the Roxy Theater in Hollywood, Roxy the Movie encapsulates the qualities that made Frank Zappa a revolutionary musical pioneer. That's January 15th at 9:15 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center in the Witzel Auditorium at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, January 12th, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. We're going to ask you today to call Suzanne Bonamici and Earl Blumenauer and ask them to draw a line in the sand, stop it now. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is on the brink of passing. It's fast-tracked. Legislation has seen to that. We're going to be speaking today with Adam Weissman with Global Justice for Animals and the Environment and with Trade Justice New York Metro. He will be addressing the Trans-Pacific Partnership and environmental aspects of it. There's virtually no aspect of life as we know it that this will not touch, and in a ruinous way, in a way our world will be no longer recognizable. If you think climate change, habitat collapse is the looming nightmare, this is what is going to potentiate your worst nightmares. And on that said, though, we have also joining us today, Adam Weissman. We also have Alexander Ross. He is an investigative journalist, a writer, and is recently back from a visit to the Malheur Wildlife Refuge, which is now apparently experiencing the worst invasive species episode it has ever seen. And talk about wildlife. It's wild, all right. And it's white. We might want to consider it wild white. That's big white boys gone gone batty, and it's you know, it's sad. It's not possible to talk to the militiamen. They only talk to God, or they certainly only listen to God. And on that note, we're going to just hit briefly on a couple of headlines. As we know, just heads up that methane, the greenhouse gas, is pouring out of Southern California Gas Company's facility in Aliso Canyon. Since October 23rd, the storage field has been blasting an unimaginable amount of methane, probably the worst offender when it comes to atmospheric pollution. 80,000 tons of methane poured into the atmosphere has forced the evacuations of nearby neighborhoods, and of course it's going to have long-term impacts far above the hills around Los Angeles. 1,700 houses, two schools evacuated. The list goes on, and it's not a pretty list. Lawmakers are being asked here in Oregon. This is strangely enough related to everything else we're talking about today, that some Oregon workers aren't getting paid what they owe. Wage theft is rampant in Oregon. You wouldn't think it, but it is. Below the radar, like so much else here, and again, like Malia, like so many other of these factors that are contributing to a social climate that once again is becoming less and less recognizable by the year, week, month, decade, and it, as it creeps along, it becomes increasingly unmanageable, and we have only Malheur to look at if we want evidence right here on the land that we share. On that note, I want to bring Alexander Ross into the discussion. Alexander, thanks for being with us today. We're just delighted to have you. And you're back. You've been to Malia, and I want to ask you if you spoke with the militia guys and what that was like, what they actually sounded like to you, and how you you feel that they what their stance is, how actually locked in is it?
Thank you very much for having me on the show. I think that they are highly dogmatic, at least in their words to the press. They have sort of scripts that they read off of and have memorized. But that said, they're a lot more kind of open to the press than I thought they would be. I thought that they were going to have security checkpoints and that they were going to be, you know, brandishing their weapons around the compound with sort of security vantage points and whatnot. In fact, I was just able with my partner, Ben, to just walk right in there and, you know, look around. We probably could have walked into these buildings. You know, there's a little museum there. It was really awkward and strange. And so that really struck me as incredible.
When was this?
This was just a couple of days. This was a few days ago. I think this was Friday night.
Did you see any evidence of the federal investigative bureau people or police or any sort of law enforcement there whatsoever? Was
in the town. We saw there were lots of police in Burns, and there was word about the FBI being all around and talking to a ton of people.
That's pretty stupid. What are they doing in Burns? They're supposed to be at the Wildlife Refuge.
Yep, that's part of the reason why people are upset in Burns is that they don't want the FBI and the cops around. And so they're not even, I mean, some people are really, you know, a lot of people are really angry about the wildlife refuge being occupied because this is a wildlife refuge that they like. You know, they don't have any problems with the wildlife refuge. However, more people are mad that their routine is being disrupted, that the feds are out there, that the schools are getting closed. One person told us that a militiaman had called in a threat to the children of the BLM, and that's why the schools are closed in Burns. And the FBI going around and talking to people, you know, what's next, you know? So that's really what's getting people peeved.
Well, I understand too, a lot of people have been threatened.
Oh, gosh. And this goes way, way back. I mean, the Hammonds, the Bundys, the members of this movement make it a habit to threaten BLM officials because... they sincerely do hate the fact that public lands exist and that their sort of passage and privilege is limited in any way.
Did you have an opportunity to point out to anyone that they've had a very sweet deal for a very long time, that they are getting our land, our public land, for almost nothing, and that their cattle are ruinously... bad for the prairie land, range land out there. They've destroyed thousands upon thousands. I mean, let's not talk acres, let's talk square miles of habitat.
I would have, but, you know, a lot of the people out there aren't ranchers.
Right.
Well, they're not ranchers.
They're not ranchers.
Yeah, people like John Ritzheimer are coming out of Phoenix, Arizona. They don't know the first thing about ranching. I talked to some people from the Alaska militia that had gone down there. One person, actually, from the Alaska militia who said that many more were coming down. And he's a king crab fisherman. You know, I don't have anything wrong with king crab fishermen, but when they're jumping into a completely different community, you know, really stirring things up, and the people who are there trying to mind their own business are all of a sudden, you know, launched into somebody else's struggle, who doesn't know the first thing about them.
Did you talk to any of the we've got Adam Weissman on the line, and he's to talk a little bit about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and we will be getting that in a moment. Well, good morning, Adam, and welcome to the KBOO Airwaves and to Air Cascadia. We have here someone, I believe, that you know, Alexander Ross is here with us, just back from the Malheur Wildlife Refuge. So,
well, thank you so much for having me on again. Great to be back on KB Radio and happy to talk about what we can do to stop the Trans-Pacific Partnership assault on all of our rights in the interest of expanding corporate profit.
Hang on just a minute. I want to ask I have one more quick question for Alexander, and then we're going to I want to bring you in, and we have to talk about it. I have absolutely resolved and promised listeners that we are going to be talking about this every day this week. But first, Alexander, did you have an opportunity to talk to any law enforcement officers and ask them if there were any actions? Probably they wouldn't tell you if there were, but did you have a chance to talk to them about
sure.
the situation?
Yeah, we talked to a couple of police officers, accidentally, in fact. And
it almost always is, isn't it? Nobody deliberately wants to talk to law enforcement.
And one of them was actually from a totally different county.
Alaska, maybe?
No, he was from Albany. And he came down because the sheriff had put a kind of a bulletin out asking for more, you know, police support from all around the state. So, yeah, and he said it was actually pretty quiet, although the militia, one of the militiamen that I talked to said that actually there was a lot of police harassment against them. And, you know, I'm not one to take anything that they say at face value, but I do think that the law enforcement there has been particularly finicky in terms of, you know, vehicles that they see that have out-of-state license plates or, you know, anything
I
suspicious.
I feel that way
really
myself, actually, but for
on,
other
yeah.
reasons. But yeah, the feds and the militia richly deserve one another. And I can only hope that they get together soon and make common cause. Hang on, Alexander. We're going to speak now with Adam a little bit, because we have this Trans-Pacific Partnership looming over us. It is horrifying. It is absolutely. Words fail me. That so few people know what this thing is, know what the effects are likely or it to be, and not likely, but will certainly be. Adam, can you talk a bit about, from your perspective, I know that you are, of course, with Trade Justice New York, and you also work with Global Justice for Animals and the Environment, the likely effects our environment, what we're talking about right now. Can you give our listeners an image of what that's likely to be?
So President Obama has been marketing the Trans-Pacific Partnership, this massive 12-country trade agreement, which is really more than a trade agreement, that includes 40% of the global economy, as the most progressive trade agreement in history. He talks about how it's going to advance protections for the environment and has strong protections for labor rights. Unfortunately, this is really all spin on behalf of the over 500 corporations who had an inside track to advising the development of the text of this agreement, while the public, the media, public interest groups, academics, even legislators were shut out from seeing and advising the development and negotiation of this trade deal. One of the clearest examples of what this deal portends came just last week when TransCanada brought a $15 billion lawsuit against the United States under the North American Free Trade Agreement, demanding monetary compensation because the U.S. chose to block construction of the disastrous Keystone XL pipeline. Under the North American Free Trade Agreement, corporations are given the power to sue governments when they feel that our environmental or public interest policies get in the way of their ability to pursue their expected future profits. And they are able to sue not for what they've invested in a project, but for all the money they believe they might theoretically make in the future on that project. Well, the Trans-Pacific Partnership will give about 9,200 more corporations those kind of powers, including corporations in countries like Japan, which, of course, has many major global-scale corporations who have a vast monetary capacity to bring this kind of case. These cases are arbitrated in international tribunals outside the jurisdiction of our own court system, arbitrated by international trade lawyers with no conflict of interest clauses, when any other given week may be representing the same kind of corporations who are bringing these sorts of suits.
Hang on, we're going to have to finish that tomorrow. Adam, we'll have to finish that tomorrow. We're out of time, and this is a lot for people to understand because a lot of people are just getting up to speed on this. That's something to digest right there. If you could come back tomorrow, we're going to continue this conversation. Thank you so much. This has been, and I want to also thank my other guest, Alexander Ross. Thank you so much for being with us today, and we are inviting Adam back on the show tomorrow, and we will continue this conversation then. This has been Air Cascadia for Tuesday, January 12, 2016. Janet Anderson engineered the show for